Ladies and gentlemen, special Tuesday edition Football Scoop Podcast. We are all back together. Great to see everybody. I was off on a high school retreat the past couple of days. A little bit of news happened. Penn State, old plug, James Franklin, 12 years in, and they just decided the program needed change. Program's been operating at a very high level, couldn't get over the absolute top. Internal turmoil, a lot of people asking questions. Zach, I'll come to you. Penn State pulled the plug. Were they right in doing so?
So the reaction has been how among coaches is how crazy is it that you went from having the lead in overtime against Oregon to fired within 2 weeks? What a volatile professional we've chosen. What a terrible statement it is on the industry of college football that they're going to pay $50 million to buy out their coach. We can debate all those things. I don't disagree with it. But at the same time, I completely understand why Penn State fired James Franklin. And I think they were right to do so, even if there's a high degree of probability the next coach won't even reach the heights of James Franklin that James Franklin reached. It's Albert Einstein said it best. The definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again. And they tried it for James Franklin for 12 years. And he had so many – if not now, win games, and they lost darn near all of them, and they lost some close, and it in the end, it drove them insane. And maybe James Franklin could have continued, and this team would have won 8 games this season and 9 next season, yada, yada, yada. You knew with zero doubt where your ceiling was, and they put everything they had in that Oregon game, and it just didn't work out for them, just like the semifinal against Notre Dame just didn't work out for them, and they were banging their head against the wall over and over and over again, and they couldn't do it anymore. And obviously, the players, the coaches, they put everything into that Oregon game. They lost, and either James Franklin, they stopped listening to him, he didn't have the right message, whatever. I don't even think it's necessarily James Franklin's fault. I don't know that there's anything he could have done differently other than win that Oregon game. But it was just time to move on. And yes, it's a terrible statement about the coaching profession, and yes, it's a bad precedent for the industry, all that stuff, but I totally understand why Penn State fell apart. I totally understand why Penn State was ready to let him go, and I'm not surprised this happened.
JB, let me pose kind of the same question to you. You feel this makes sense? If you were Penn State's leadership, would you have said, hey, 12 years, heck of a run, can't get over it, something's wrong here, we are Penn State?
I feel based on Sunday's podcast and noting then that we said Penn State's season ended on October 11th, 2025, and that, yeah, there were a few games left, but the season was just plugged into a machine in the wall. It would be pretty hypocritical for me to say it didn't make sense. It's still hard to fathom. It's still hard to believe that Penn State made this move when it made the move. At 3-3, not 0-6. Now it's 3-3 without a win that even remotely resembles quality. It's 4 consecutive losses to power conference teams, the teams that you're measured against. It's the history of all the losses against the teams you're measured against. 4-21 against AP top 10. And the metrics are even worse when you break that down to what they've done against Michigan and Ohio State and in other big moment games. And, you know, they had a pretty fortuitous path to get to the semifinals last year because they hosted an SMU team that was the last team into the field at home, and then they got Boise State out in the desert. So they had the path of least resistance to get to the semifinals. But it's still hard to believe that it's happened. It's hard to believe that this guy took your program to yet another level and had you very close to playing for a title. You're not Alabama right now. You haven't won a title since 86. So there's a pretty easy case to defend James Franklin, and I don't have a problem doing that. It's also entirely understandable. I think, though, ultimately what it boils down to is Penn State has never, ever had more money invested in its coaching staff and its playing roster, and it was disgusted by the results. And where we are now in college football, that's inarguable. And nobody's going to feel sorry for James Franklin. Everybody keeps saying $49 million. That's wrong. It's more than $50 million. $49 million is what it was as of December 1st. They still got to pay his butt for the next 6 weeks in addition to that. So it's well over $50 million. I just want to make that clear. So nobody's going to feel sorry for James Franklin being guaranteed, no matter what, well over $50 million. And they say, well, he's got to make an attempt to find comparable work. Well, there's not many comparable jobs to Penn State. And so I think they'll have a hard time holding him to, quote unquote, finding comparable work or making a reasonable effort to find comparable work when Penn State is holding itself up to say, we're going to fire our coach right now, halfway through the season. The best point I've heard is Steve Sarkisian saying, it's supposed to be about the players. We know the profession we're in. Does this make Penn State better right now? If they reel off 6 wins in a row to close the season somehow, then that makes the brass's decision look like it was in the best interest of the players as well as their own interest. But it's a complete encapsulation of where we are in college athletics. But it doesn't happen. This doesn't happen if Penn State doesn't convince Drew Aller, Nicholas Singleton, and Catron Allen all to run it back after that narrow loss to Notre Dame. This just does not happen. If they're 3-3 and they don't have those three dudes, James Franklin's still your coach.
I think that's a great point, John. And I think you brought up last season, and we need to really be clear-eyed about where Penn State really was. I mean, they made it to the semifinals without having to beat Ohio State, didn't play Oregon in the regular season, didn't even have to beat them in the Big Ten championship game. And then you got a playoff path, a once-in-a-lifetime playoff path, where you get SMU at home, Boise State at neutral, and then Notre Dame. That, even if they repeated this season last year, I meant to look this up before we did this, but now we're in a new format where it's straight seeding, and you wouldn't have gotten SMU and Boise State. Your path would have been more difficult, and that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that they blew, frankly. And you look back, in a way, James Franklin was ahead of his time because he had a lot of those teams. Those Saquon Barkley teams would have made the playoff multiple years under that format. And maybe they break through and win a game. But at the same time, I was continually frustrated throughout the years because the various algorithms would rank Penn State as the number three team in the country. We never even really knew that they actually were because they never had to actually go out there and prove it against light competition.
I think two other teams come to mind when you think of the investment that Penn State has made into football with their roster, with their coaching staff. And the sky high expectations with three of your key returners coming back to run it back with national title inspirations. That's Texas Tech. That's Ohio State last year, right? Two teams that have invested heavily in those areas and expected big results. Texas Tech is paying off. We saw how Ohio State's paid off last year. Penn State is the one team that is not like the other two. It has not paid off. So the expectations were so much greater. And justifiably so, but James Franklin was the man in charge, and they did not meet those expectations after a record investment. So you become the product of the expectations at some point. And James Franklin helped build that program back up from Bill O'Brien's 2 years in Happy Valley, and they were under some incredible sanctions and NCAA punishments. So he did an admirable job. I think he brought it as far as he possibly could, and it was just time.
So Penn State, in addition to paying the players massively now, they also just opened the purse and said, go get your best offensive coordinator you can find in the country. Go get the best defensive coordinator you can in the country. James made his hires, and the team didn't get any better.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Tom Allen was a really good hire last year at defensive coordinator, and he and James Franklin helped revive Tom Allen's career after he was fired from head coach at Indiana. But the Jim Knowles hasn't worked out, and they're paying him well over $3 million a year. And I'm pretty sure – I think it's been reported. I think we reported it was a three-year deal at that, over $3 million a year. Paid lavishly for Andy Koltunicki. And, you know, he's done some nice things, but the consistency's not been there. The production has not been there. Their offensive line is considered to have a number of NFL prospects on it. They're not just dominating the trenches. Yeah, it's still very shocking to me. Like, how many we as a staff have been talking about the expected moves this year since August or before, and Penn State was never a single conversation or topic point for any of us at any point in time. I don't remember. This is my sixth season as part of Football Scoop. I don't remember a case that was so seemingly out of the blue. We understand why it got to this point, but I don't ever remember having never discussed. We discussed if James Franklin would leave. I think if Florida had opened a year ago, he would have endeavored for that job, especially on the heels of a semifinal run. But this is about as shocking of a transition as we've dealt with.
Before we get to, okay, where do they go from here? You know, I heard you guys say, you know, he's going to get $50 million, you know, the coaches are getting so much money and how disgusting is this and all that stuff. In my mind, this is entirely the athletic director's fault. They allowed themselves to get taken advantage of by the coaches' agents, not the coaches. The coaches don't negotiate these things. Coach be like, give me $1 million and I'm good. Give me $2 million. But whatever the market is, I'm good. The agents go in there and they work the, well, you know, you got to fully guarantee this. You know, you got to pay him, you know, pay him in 60 days. No, okay, you pay him over time, but you got to fully guarantee this and everything. And the agents and athletic directors are like, man, if I want him, I guess I got to guarantee this money forever. It's insane. Man, have a spine.
And
we are Penn State. It's a privilege for him to work here. I don't have to bend over backwards and give him $50 million in the event I fire him. Like, he should feel fortunate that I'm paying him $9 million. But the athletic directors don't have that spine. They don't have that strength, that backbone to stand behind their university and say, I'm going to be a good steward of my university's money. Like, no, the agents tell me I got to do this. The search firm said, you got to pay this.
And the wild thing is he signed that 10-year extension in November of 2021, which was like a 3-week period right after Michigan State had done their deal with Mel Tucker. How does that look now? Where it's like just that fever infected some schools. Brian Kelly got his LSU deal. Lincoln Riley got his LSU deal right in that same like 6-week window. And now that's not happening again. And of course, that was coming off of a seven and six season. That wasn't even one of Penn State's empty calorie 11 win seasons. That was a 7-win season for Penn State. And the AD that signed that deal is, of course, no longer there.
And many of those were negotiated by the exact same agent. That's absolutely staggering to me.
Well, I mean, you guys have heard me say it before on our podcast, and that is like, I can barely functionally play poker. I'm very marginal at blackjack. Put me all in against any AD right now, but I'm willing to take my chances because I think I can bluff them because they get their asses bluffed off every single year in contract negotiations. That's the bottom line. You're right. It's going to take an AD. An AD is going to, much of the way that ADs tie financial incentives into their coaches' performances, and plenty of ADs get stuff if their coaches win championships, there should be AD contracts that punish them every time they have to fire one of their own hires or every time they extend a guy only to fire him 2 years later. Like, there should be some sort of balancing of the financial scales so that there's some incentives for these ADs who are supposed to be shrewder businessmen than ever before to have some fiscal responsibility. And we all love college football. We all love football, or we wouldn't be on this podcast together. But this is the epic of financial irresponsibility and ridiculousness in a time where the country is trying really hard not to be in a full-blown recession, when inflation is insane, when groceries have never been more expensive. Like, this is heinous use of funds, period. I would argue it's about as bad a timing for society writ large as you could possibly imagine.
Agents are experts at kind of psychological warfare. Like, you don't want to let this guy go, then you're going to have to hire someone else. And it preys on the ego is not the right word of athletic directors, but like you're going to have to go hire someone better now. Well, imagine if, and I'm just throwing this name out there because it's, he's the hot name right now and big bravado. Imagine if we had an athletic director with like the psyche of a Kurt Cignetti, like call your bluff and I'm going to go hire someone even better. Like how great would that be? That doesn't exist in the AD world, but that would be absolutely epic to see.
You're right, Doug. It's the psyche of insecurity. I think that's what it is. It's the fear of the unknown that they might have to go make this hire. All the while, because we obtained the letter, Pat Kraft is signing his letter to all the former players. We are. Okay, well, you are Penn State. Act like it.
Amen. Act like it. When y'all said that,
I blame the agents, though. I don't blame the agents, though. I really don't. Like,
no, go get yours, right?
Yeah, if I'm going
to sit at the poker table. If they're dumb enough to give it to you.
Yeah, if I'm going to sit at the poker table and I can take the whole damn pot, I'm going to take the whole damn pot.
It's my obligation to my client to do that if it's available. Yes, it's the athletic directors that are soft. It's the search firms that are telling the athletic directors, no, that's a good deal. Goodness gracious. Doug, as you were sitting there, I was trying to think of who was an AD who was like, who's
that guy? Cignetti.
I don't know that I have it off the top of my head.
Well, I can tell you this, John, when JB threw out the idea of a clause in the AD's contract that penalizes them like when they have to fire one of their own hires, Scott Strickland heard that and just vomited.
I had the same thought, honestly. Yeah.
You know, until he was bad at the end of his run, Jeremy Foley was pretty darn good at hiring coaches and getting stuff done until it went so awry for him. Maybe Trev Alberts is that guy. Certainly he has the football background to look. Trev went and got Scott Frost when he had to bring him home. I don't know. I mean, there's not the dudes of yesteryore.
Del Conte has, you know, made some missteps, but Del Conte's pretty good to me, in my opinion.
Yeah, Del Conte's pretty darn elite. Yeah.
All right. So where's Penn State go from here? I've had some conversations. Obviously, there's guys on staff who want it and are making that known. And you can't discount things like that, especially when you went out and hired the best offense coordinator, the best defense coordinator. And there's some relationship issues there. But anyway, outside the current staff, the names that I know that we've heard several of these. Obviously, Matt Rhule, former Penn State player, has professed his love for Penn State and has always said it's my dream job type thing. Matt hasn't been tremendously successful in Nebraska. He's in a rebuild, still in a rebuild, showing signs of life. They beat Maryland, and that's proof of sign of life. Sure. I still am on the under there for the year. Matt Rhule, Cignetti. Cignetti's kind of a big fish that people have their eyes on. I've heard that they would be willing to investigate Dan Mullen a little bit. And then the most interesting one that I heard was they are going to make an outreach to Nick Saban to discuss the search, to discuss who he might suggest. Oh, and Nick, while I have you, is it something you think you'd be interested in? I don't know why you wouldn't do that. To me, you'd be crazy not to do that. So those are some of the leanings I've been hearing. JB, I hear you're excited to share. What do you got, buddy?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm with you. I hear the Rhule stuff more than anything. I've been checking on some stuff this morning. We'll see if they change course. I'm told as of like the start of this podcast that it's not expected that Penn State will use a search firm for this process. Again, they could change their mind, but I was told that literally at right around 11 central or 11 Eastern, 11 a.m. Eastern, that I don't believe they're using one. I don't expect them to use one. So that's interesting because I do believe Oregon State is using Glenn Sugiyama and his firm for their quest to replace Trent Bray. So search firms are, you know, use them, don't use them. They're not as in this age of digital information, they're not as critical as a search firm was 30 years ago when they could do all the behind the scenes stuff for you. You should be able to do that yourself.
I have a pretty good information. Penn State is going to actually wind up naming some bit of a committee, but they have one or two very strong football advisors to Pat Kraft and to the president of the university who are going to have a massive amount of say in this. These are Penn Staters and very, very influential and intelligent football people.
So I have a lot to say on Matt Rhule, largely because I have a column on this topic that's 98% done and will hopefully publish by the time this is out. But first of all, so James Franklin became a bit of a punchline towards the end against top teams, and I did my fair share of criticizing him. But at the same time, he is an absolute nightmare to follow for whoever the next Penn State head coach is because of what he accomplished. The next Penn State coach is going to inherit a fan base that needs 10 years of therapy. And I understand why. They win 11 games a year, but they don't win any of the games that matter. So the next Penn State coach is going to go to press conference. Hey guys, we're 5-0. Okay. Don't care. Beat Ohio State. Hey guys, we're 9-0 and we just beat Maryland by 20. Give me Big Ten championship. I need Big Ten championship. I deserve a Big Ten championship. The closer you get to winning the games that matter, the more psychotic they're going to act because they've been down this road so many times. These people need therapy, and they're going to expect their next head coach to be their therapist, and you're not going to be celebrated until you win a national championship. You're going to take on a debt of a lipstick-looking tube trophy that you have to deliver to them until they accept you. And that's going to be the case no matter who takes this job, and especially so for Matt Rhule. Look at the jobs Matt Rhule has had. Temple been in a successful run when he got the job, but it's Temple. He took over at Baylor when they were as down as they'll ever be due to the Art Briles scandal. Did a great job there, but the expectations at Baylor were zero at that time. Then he went to Carolina. That didn't work. Now he's at Nebraska, where they're a quarter century in to their own mental health nightmare and the fact that how badly that program's been mismanaged. Now to the point where they would go 6-6 last year, it's treated like a conference championship. They're 5-1 this year, and they just beat Maryland by 3 points, and their players wouldn't celebrate it in the stands because they beat Maryland by 3. At Penn State, you beat Maryland by 3, you're going to be scared to walk into that press conference because the media is going to treat you, well, why didn't you win this game 28-10? How dare you not beat Maryland by 20? And Matt Rhule, he's never coached a job like that. You look at Brian Kelly – had to rip into the media there because they beat Florida by 10 points and it wasn't enough. Mike Elko did the same thing when they won a game. I forget who, but he was like, come on, guys, we won the game. That's not healthy, but it's understandable because the expectations at LSU are a national championship. The expectations at Texas A&M are a national championship. The expectations at Penn State are going to be a national championship. And Matt Rhule's never been in that sort of pressure cooker. Right now he's living on – easy street where you just win and you're treated like a king there, and that's understandable because of where Nebraska's been. It's not going to be that way at Penn State. Penn State of 1997 is not the Penn State of 2025, and if you're an alum, once you walk through that door, there's no walking back out. Like his relationship to his alma mater is going to change forever. Maybe for better, probably for much, much worse. That's just the reality of it. And that James Franklin's going to be a tough act to follow regardless of who takes this job.
As a former player, I would contend, though, he immediately walks in with a bit more equity than what Franklin was ever able to accrue. I also would contend that because James Franklin was there for 12 years and couldn't get them over the hump, that there would be some appreciation if it ends up being Matt Rhule that he's willing to accept that challenge. But you make a great point, Zach, and it's funny to hear it discussed about Penn State, because I literally have had this very discussion through the years with University of Tennessee coaches, from Derek Dooley to Butch Jones to whomever, and I would try to explain to them, what you have to understand is, yes, you lost to Florida 3 times in a row, but this program lost to Florida 11 times in a row or 12 times in a row or what have you. So you have to understand that you're wearing the aggregate of those losses. You're not just wearing your own 3 losses. And so Matt Rhule will be wearing, if it's Matt Rhule, he'll be wearing the failures of James Franklin. You just have to go into that situation with your eyes wide open and know that and decide. You know, we're talking about ADs with the chutzpah to make tough decisions. it would be a tough decision to go to Penn State right now if you're in a very lucrative job and in a solid situation, because it is going to be difficult. But I do think that Matt Rhule would have some advantages that James Franklin didn't have. And I do think that also, no matter what you bring with you next year, you're not going to have the expectations of having just come off of a come-from-ahead loss in the semifinals when you should have won a game and played for a national title. And you're not going to have the most expensive roster in the history of Penn State. So I do think those are things. We just sat there. You talked about Texas A&M. I wonder if Jimbo Fisher gets a call, or how hard Jimbo Fisher tries to get a call in this, because Scott and I know very well Jimbo Fisher is ready to get back into coaching. He's made it known to some of these other openings already that he would have great interest. So you have to believe, with Jimbo Fisher originally being from West Virginia, understanding the history and the heritage of a Penn State program, that he would also probably try to get a line on this job as well.
We can't talk about Matt Rhule's candidacy here at Penn State without addressing the elephant in the room. I mean, James Franklin had so much criticism of his record against top 25, top 10, top 5 opponents, big game, James. Matt Rhule has a career record of 2-23 against top 25 teams. Now, again, we're talking about he was at Temple. I believe those are where those two top 25 wins came during his time with the Owls. But he's also like 0-11 against top 10 teams. Now, he's never – I mean, Nebraska is a former blue blood program that had fallen on some hard times. He's never been in a situation like Penn State with the resources and talent and all of that at his disposal. So maybe it's unfair to hold him to the same standard as James Franklin, but you're getting rid of one guy for one reason and hire another guy with some of the same issues. And that the only reason, or one of the main reasons Matt Rhule is in that conversation, is because he's a former Penn State player. And Penn State is one of those places, reminds me of Michigan a lot in a way. When there's an opening, they feel like they want a Penn State guy, like someone that understands their tradition, mm-hmm. understands Happy Valley a little bit and the dynamics in play there. That there's a lot of similarities there between those two programs.
Really, so I'm glad you – oh, go ahead, JB.
I was just going to say, you're right. Like, this is not the Penn State job of 97, but it wasn't the Nebraska job of 96 either, when Matt Rhule took over there. And he took over for the favored son who had completely failed. Matt Rhule, Cignetti, those are obviously – Penn State is making it very clear they're going to swing for it all. We talk about the finances involved. This is a $150 million decision minimum, because you're talking $50 to get rid of James Franklin and company, another $10 to get rid of all the assistants, $50 to buy out somebody, whether it's Cignetti or Rhule in all likelihood, and then a minimum of another $50 to $60 million commitment to that regime. So really, it's probably closer to a $175 million decision, which is just absolutely bananas. If it gets past those two, I'm curious to see where it would go. If they would go get a program builder, get a guy who's got some tough skin, just exactly where they would pivot to.
Well, I'm glad you brought up fit, Doug, because that Pat Kraft said yesterday, like, he didn't say these words, but fit is going to matter a lot here. He, blue collar, find me a place in America that doesn't have a blue collar culture. Anyway, that I always laugh anytime a job opens, because it seems like our colleagues in the media kind of make it a game to just see who could throw out the most off the wall name for a job, just to try and prove that they know ball or something. Like, I'm not going to call anyone out by name here, but I saw someone throw out Lane Kiffin for Penn State. Like, give me a freaking break. Lane would decline that call immediately. Someone at a major network threw out Eli Drinkwitz. And I was like, what are you – Eli Drinkwitz is not getting a call for this job. But I'm going to throw out one name, and I'm going to give this person credit because I thought it made a whole lot of sense. And I was listening to Josh Pate talk, and he threw out Matt Campbell. And I was instantly disappointed in myself for not thinking of it first, because to me, he makes a lot of sense. You can't get Cignetti and – I don't think Cignetti leaves Indiana, everything they've done for him, and what obviously he's done a lot for Indiana. Indiana's done a lot for him. But Matt Campbell has Iowa State winning 2.5 times probably their historical record. So you could pick apart what he's done there. Well, he's at Iowa State. And so I think your A-list, whatever, big shiny names, your Sabins, your Cignettis, I think Matt Campbell would do really good things at Penn State.
I think if it was going to be Matt Campbell, he would have needed this timing a year ago. He would have needed it to be James Franklin exiting and him on the heels of playing for the Big 12 championship and all of that. I don't think I mean, I'm not ignoring his track record, his body of work, because, again, it's exemplary, especially for Iowa State. But I don't think that they can – I don't think you can pivot from James Franklin to Matt Campbell in this environment, even if Matt Campbell might make sense. But along those lines, if it gets past those two guys, does a guy like Clark Lee get a call? He's worked in the Northeast. He's been at Syracuse. What he's done at Vanderbilt is the best they've done since James Franklin. Now, maybe Penn State says, we can't go the Vanderbilt route again. I don't know. Probably not. But Clark Lee has done at Vanderbilt more than James Franklin, because it's harder now to win in a lot of ways. And the SEC is better than it was when Franklin got rolling at Penn State a little over a decade ago. Just some interesting stuff. And then
– Well, I think in regards to Matt Campbell, I think that's an interesting point, and that's certainly the rebuttal people throw out there. If I'm Matt Campbell and I really want this Penn State job, I need to get my message out there that he's kind of a victim of his own success. Like, say Iowa State goes 6-6 this season, that's a good season for Iowa State, but it looks like a down year because of what Matt Campbell's raised the bar so historically at Iowa State. So if you're Matt Campbell and you want to make a play for this job, you need to get that message out there. And to be clear, Matt Campbell did not call me and ask me to get that message out there for him. This is all my saying.
He just called to see what you were grilling tonight, or he called to see what your first play was going to be in that middle school game tonight, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Cignetti is from Pennsylvania, coached at Pitt. I think he was at Temple at some point. Coached at IUP, head coach at IUP for a number of years. He's like mid-60s. He's like, I think Cignetti, he's a young, like 63, 64, something like that.
He's got to be the first and second call.
Like, to me, that's where this thing starts. It really is.
And yeah, for all that Indiana is doing in funding him in a huge way, paying Bryant Haynes great money, paying the assistants, having devoted unprecedented resources to the support staff, it's my understanding that Indiana NIL is still lagging. So they're doing all this other stuff, but their NIL is not where Penn State's NIL is. Indiana's roster is not remotely costing this year what Penn State's roster is costing.
And you've seen what Kurt Cignetti has done for offensive football. I mean, he has quarterbacks who can go win a game for you. Penn State under James Franklin just never has. I know, Zach, you keep saying there was one, but no, there wasn't.
I mean,
there was not a game winner at quarterback under James Franklin.
I mean, literally, we saw this month, this last 3 weeks, Kurt Cignetti's done more, beat the same Oregon team that ended James Franklin's tenure. He went there and beat them by 10 points on the road while his team made plenty of mistakes. They overcame that. Like, I was asked, I did a radio show. Our friend JB Nate Brown was like, well, is Nebraska a better job than Penn State? I said, well, I never would have said Indiana was a better job than either one of those. But right now, Indiana's closer to winning a national championship than Penn State and certainly Nebraska. So has that question been thrown on its head? And I don't know. Or is Kurt Cignetti just that dude and he can win anywhere? I don't have a definitive answer to any of those questions.
I think it's Cignetti. I think it's Cignetti that's that dude. Because if you're talking Indiana, Penn State, Nebraska as football jobs right now, there's no question to me that Penn State is the best football job of those three. The same I would say Indiana is absolutely the best basketball job of those three. I think those are just absolute facts to me. Now, when you talk about people just throwing stuff off the wall, and I had some guys send me somebody's list on Sunday afternoon, and I was like, well, why not Vince Lombardi? Just unfreeze him. Let's just get Vince Lombardi as a candidate for Penn State. Some of these lists are so absurd. There's another one out today about Penn State making a run at Marcus Freeman. I don't buy that, and Marcus Freeman is not leaving Notre Dame for Penn State because Notre Dame is a better job than Penn State, and I can't say that loud enough. Not where things are right now for what Notre Dame has going in NIL, for what Marcus Freeman has done for that program. Marcus Freeman might get NFL calls. He would absolutely listen all night long if Ryan Day went to the NFL and Ohio State called, because that's his alma mater. He's not leaving Notre Dame for Penn State. I just need to say that very clearly.
There can't be a lot of jobs better than Penn State, though. I mean, I know we always talk about the SEC. And, you know, there's four or five down here that are just unbelievable. Penn State's got a lot. I mean, a lot to offer. Yeah, so, huge.
So on that note, we got two resident SEC fans or people here. Is a middle of the tier, you know, ranked SEC program, would a head coach from there be interested in a Penn State where it's maybe a slightly easier path to a national title? Like, I know Zach said Eli Drinkwitz is a crazy name to throw out there. I actually read that and I was like, I don't think it's that crazy. I think you could leave Mizzou, plug in at Penn State, be a blue collar, pound the rock. You know, maybe he brings his quarterback back to Penn State. You know, there's some connection there, but there's an easier path at Penn State than there is in the middle of the road ranked SEC. So I don't think that's a crazy idea.
Yeah, exactly. So Penn State's a much better job than Missouri.
No, so I want to be clear here. I didn't think that was ridiculous that Eli Drinkwitz wouldn't leave Missouri for Penn State. I don't think Eli Drinkwitz is getting a call from Penn State. Like, Eli Drinkwitz cuts a mold that Penn State is not looking, that Pat Kraft is not going to go hire Eli Drinkwitz's personality. That's just my opinion here. He's looking to cut a mold with his hire, a guy who can scheme up a defense while he's fixing a carburetor. That's what Penn State's looking for in its next head coach. That's not Eli Drinkwitz.
You're saying Drink can't fix a car?
Drink could not fix a car. Drake can fix your modem, but he can't fix a carburetor. And Penn State's looking for a mechanic.
I don't know how we could end this podcast any better. I got nothing better than that. And when Drake calls me, I'm going to let him know your phone number.
That's fine.
Because that was fantastic. This is going to be a great one to follow. So on Football Scoop, we offered the opportunity this year for the first time ever to go premium. If you're still watching this, God bless you. You're the type of guy who probably needs to go premium, because we're going to start off putting some behind the scenes stuff, some what's really happening in the search in our premium articles. Give it a run. Go premium. We'll see you on Football Scoop. We're out.